Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
You are listening to Lunchtime Live's Election Town Hall with myself, Andrea Gilligan, where we want you to have your say about general election 2024. So today I'm joined by some of our Lunchtime Live listeners, who of course most importantly are voters Friday week. We're also joined by some of our election candidates and current politicians and our own political correspondent Sean Defoe. And we just want over the next 2 hours today to hear about the things that matter most to you when the politicians knock on your door, when they're canvassing your vote, and the things that are really in your mind when you're voting on the 29th of November. So over the next 2 hours, we just want to hear about those particular issues. If there's an issue you want to raise, do let us know. If you're at home and want to join us on WhatsApp, it's 087 1400 106. But really, I just want to hear the current mood of the nation, and I want you to have your say today. So the cost of living crisis is arguably one of the most commonly used phrases over the past 2 years. And that's what we're going to chat about for the next few minutes. We want to hear what you, our voters, think about the prices that you're paying for everything every single day. And more importantly, we want to hear how our potential new politicians might address that, might address the cost of your bills and potentially put more money back in your pocket. We've Aisling here with us today in the audience. I know Aisling's from Dublin, and thanks for joining us here, Aisling. Like, you five young adults at home, and I've no doubt you love them all dearly, but you'd probably love to get rid of some of them too, I'd say, out of the house. So what would you like from the next government?
Hi, Andrea.
How are you?
What I would like to know is how the future politicians, or the politicians that are going to be elected, are going to handle the brain drain that we have in Ireland, because my children can't afford to move out. They are now looking at moving abroad. My eldest daughter has just gotten a visa to live and work in Canada, so that's one that's leaving. My younger two children are also looking to leave. And the reason they want to leave is because they can't afford to live here. So we're not only losing our current sort of young adults, we're going to probably lose our future generation as well. So I want to know what can be done and what is going to be done sooner rather than later, because I could end up with no children living in Ireland and maybe grandchildren living abroad. And that's quite upsetting for me.
And we've also just heard Eamon mention in the news there 2 moments ago that, you know, the cost of homes up 10%, even in the year up to September. So the Fine Gael candidate for Dublin Fingal West, Grace Boland, is with me today. And Grace, I know you're a first time candidate in the general election, but your party's obviously been in government for 14 years. So how do you tell Aisling and everybody else that's here with us and listening that you're going to do something different?
So I agree with you. Our best resource in Ireland isn't gold and oil. It is us. It is our hardworking, well-educated women and men, boys and girls, and we need to do everything we can to retain them. Fine Gael has announced a $40 billion housing plan, which will see 303,000 homes built in the next 6 years, reaching 60,000 per year by the end of 2030. We are seeing 500 people per week buying their first home. And we see some of the opposition parties, and they want to pull the rug from under one of our most successful supports, which is the Help to Buy scheme. Fine Gael wants to strengthen this while we are building more homes. And we are training more people so we can build more homes. And we will see delivery.
Yeah, I suppose for Aisling, though, maybe by some of the time that these maybe new policies come into effect that you're talking about, Aisling's five kids will be gone. They'll be in Australia.
We are seeing housing increase every year, Andrea. We have seen the number of new homes built trebled from 7,000 to 21,000 between 2011 and 2019 under Fine Gael. The number of new homes grew rapidly at over 20% a year from 2014 to 2019. We are building more social housing homes than ever before. So we are delivering, and it is coming through. And in my own constituency in Fingal, we are delivering more. Fingal is delivering more homes than any other local authority in the country.
I'm sure there'll be a lot of our other politicians have something to say too about the delivery of housing and the statistics that we're hearing from Grace. But I just want to bring Rebecca here from Kildare with us. How are you, Rebecca? Thanks for coming to join us today. You're a college student, isn't that right?
I am a third level student.
Yeah. So like you're dealing with some of the same issues as Aisling's children. You're renting. You're looking at housing. You've got the admin fees for college. What is the cost of living like
as a student?
As a student, I think I've heard a lot of people put forward the idea of cutting third level education fees, which I think is a step in the right direction, but it doesn't address some of the other issues we're facing as students. I mean, accessible and affordable healthcare, accessible and affordable public transport, and obviously housing being the number one issue. I'm, as well as being a full-time student, I work 30 hours a week, and I still, there's no way that I can afford the cost of living without the financial help that I get from my parents. So I guess my question would kind of be more, what can be done to address this issue?
And that's, I know, not just a concern for you, obviously, as a current student, but a lot of our audience here today have family, you know, their own sons and daughters are currently at that college stage and saving for that. Fianna Fáil councillor Shane Moynihan is here with us. Shane's the Fianna Fáil candidate for the Dublin Midwest constituency. You know, to answer Rebecca's question about the cost of going to college, what are Fianna Fáil going to do any differently this time round?
Well, I think thanks to Rebecca for the question as well. And I've heard that speaking to students living in my own constituency, that the cost of everything that combined with third level education is constantly increasing. So I think concrete steps that we have taken over the last 4 years, and look at the record, is we have reduced the cost of public transport, which I know a lot of students depend upon. For people like Rebecca who are working part-time as well, we have made a target intervention on the reduction of the USC rate to benefit those workers that would be working 30 hours a week, to give more money back in your pocket to help with that assistance in the tax of living. We have to continue that work pays for people like Rebecca to make sure that they get access to as much of their income as they can to sustain with the cost in the price of living. But in the broader piece is then looking at third level education, looking at those reductions in fees, but also looking at increasing the availability of SUSE grants for third level students as well. But I think our focus in terms of delivery thus far has been on easing the burden for students, for families and for workers, and even with initiatives like the renter's tax credit as well, that has also lessened the burden on those students who are renting at the moment too.
That was something, Aisling, I know you mentioned to me previously. You talked about the rent tax credit and you know, the difficulties you had around that. Like, even if it was increased again, you know, in subsequent budgets, would that do anything to help your kids?
Not enough. Just not enough. We need more.
Can more be done on that, Shane?
Well, look, we're looking at increasing it. I'd love to get the feedback from Aisling about what specifically isn't working on it, because I think that's exactly the sort of tailored feedback that we need to know about how we improve initiatives like that. The feedback I've got from renters in my constituency is that it has helped, but certainly I'd love to hear more about Aisling's case, about what exactly is not working for her, and see if we can tailor that into the policy that we design.
Just maybe on that, because we have some of the other politicians obviously here with us as well, and I might maybe bring in just People Before Profit Solidarity Councillor Ruth Coppinger is with me here too. Ruth, just I suppose to answer, if you want to talk to Rebecca and Aisling, what can you do any differently this time round if you're back in the 34th Dáil?
Well, just on the point of the brain drain. So when I lost my seat, I went back into teaching, and teachers are not to be found. Nurses, therapists, it's impacting throughout the care system. And at the root of it all is the housing crisis and the failure of this government to provide affordable housing for essential workers, for everybody in society. One of the things that we could do is look at a city allowance, for example, for nurses, teachers and others to be able to live in the cities. We are losing subjects in schools. My own daughter just did her Leaving Cert, had a rotation of different teachers, and obviously we can't get then teachers for autism classes and all of the other learning support.
And would you just have that London, or that effectively the London waiting, the allowance for living in the likes of the capital city, would you just offer that to teachers or to other civil servants?
No, I mean, I've been told Connolly Hospital, our local hospital, is running on agency nursing. I've been told physio is being rationed at the hospital. We have to do something. Now, obviously, the root of it is the housing crisis. So Fingal County Council has been mentioned. I was elected to Fingal in June. Fingal didn't build for years public housing whatsoever. So the success story that you're talking about, I'm highlighting land banks that Fingal has, and every council has. They could be building affordable housing. So, for example, one of the land banks, I've already succeeded in pushing them to develop, but another has 7,000 homes, Fingal has said, could be built on it near Ashtown, near a train line, absolutely ideal for people to live in. And they're talking about 20 years. We have to build that within the next 5 years and provide affordable housing, 50% affordable, 50% social, for workers and for ordinary families to be able to get a house, as long as it's left in the hands of the vulture funds and the private sector. It will never, ever be affordable.
Just on this, and I want to come to other aspects of the cost of living, because there's more than, I suppose, the renting and the mortgage and the cost of going to college. But our own political correspondent, Sean Defoe, is here with us today. And I know you've attended and you've been looking at a lot of the political parties' manifestos and their election promises, and you've attended their launches, Sean. You know, is there likely to be any major shift in how we address dealing with rent, dealing with going to college, from what you've been looking at and reading in these manifestos?
Again, it depends on the party, with so many in front of us. If I was to run through all 10, we might be here for the entire 2 hours.
But
there are lots of
the
biggest shift in any one. Well, if you look at some of them, I think Fine Gael has a promise, for example, to make student fees free, to entirely scrap them over the lifetime of the next government. You've mentioned other parties talking about actually cutting them. So there's something a lot of parties are promising to raise that renters tax credit, you've already mentioned. But there are obviously problems accessing that. Landlords not registered with the RTB. A lot of people who can't get on there. When you look to cost of living, a lot of the promises in the manifesto are across the likes of social welfare, raising the pension across the board and dealing with it over a number of years. But also what isn't, I suppose, wrapped up in these is the way it's been dealt with for the last 3 years has been through one-off payments. And I'd be interested, because I haven't seen anything actually in the manifestos from the government parties, if anyone wants to jump in on this, as to whether they would be kept. Because when people are looking at their bills now and saying, yeah, great, this winter was all right, I got 400 quid here or whatever, there's no commitment to keep those going.
Would you know what we might do? Keep a note on that, and we're going to come back to that in a few moments, maybe with some of the with some of our politicians, because I know for a lot of you, like, a big issue in terms of cost of living, and this is something that listeners have been telling me in emails over the past few days when we've been asking you to get in touch about the issues that matter to you. It's what you're paying for the likes of your groceries, your food, your utility bills that come in at the end of every month. And we all have to eat. We need goods to move around the country. So Cyril McGuinness is with me here today as well. Cyril is a HGV driver. Like, I know, Cyril, you've had a couple of toll increases, for instance, already this year. You've got the cost of fuel as well. But how much does it cost to put a lorry on the road now?
It's a truck back in 15. A brand new truck was costing me 96,000. The exact same truck is costing me 135,000. Tolls, we're spending around 1,500 euros a week on the M50. It has been paid for by hauliers three times over. The simple way of reducing cost, the cost of living, to every person in this country overnight would be to decrease the VAT on my invoices. Straight away, the cost of doing business would be reduced, and you would see that in everyone's pocket. The second thing is, for essential services like hauliers, the M50 should be free.
How much is your latest toll now with the latest increase, Cyril?
We're paying 7.30 one way on the M50, and we can use that 20 times a day.
So your bill potentially could...
Each day? Every time it goes up, you could see the hairs on the back of my arm. Another stupid thing that the government have done with the RSA is we have to get our vehicles tested every year. And for every truck that we have about four trailers. We can get them tested, and years ago we used to get a cert from the garage. Now the cert comes from the RSA. It costs 17 million for those certs to come out every year.
Collectively for the whole industry?
For the whole industry.
Okay.
Currently, the Irish fleet travels 2 billion kilometres providing services and goods throughout Ireland. Never before has a job been lost in Ireland because you couldn't get a truck. Through COVID, through Brexit, through all the problems that we had, we currently give in revenue on fuel alone somewhere in the region of 10 million a week. Somewhere in the region of 90 cent a litre goes straight into revenue. Well, if the government, and the government are just putting a rubber stamp on that, if the government cut back on some of that straight away without cutting anyone's wage, services would be cheaper and your money would go further.
Just on that, Cyril, I want to put some of your points to the Green Party councillor and candidate for Dublin Bay South, Hazel Chew, who's with us here today. Because, Hazel, I know a lot of your priorities are going to be around, you know, marrying and balancing environmental concerns with, obviously, sustainability. And then you have Cyril, who, like, he needs to get the goods into Dunnes and Lidl and Supervalue. And I'm sure nobody in this room wants to pay any more for them.
No, absolutely not. And to the balance, I think everyone straight away thinks, well, the Greens are all about taxes and the Greens are trying to make your cost of living higher, but we're not. We're the ones who reduce childcare costs by 50%. We're the ones looking at a state childcare public funding at the moment. We're the ones who brought in cost rental, 2,000 units of it, to try to lower market rent, which is something Root and others have talked about. We're the one tackling the housing crisis head on. To Cyril's point about costs of haulage, listen, the M50, it shouldn't be a single point of cost. It should gauge on distance rather than a single point, and it should be reduced. You're right.
But at least two, to my mind, if not three, toll increases and this year.
These increases need to be looked at as a whole, but that's specific examples. Let's look at overall thoughts on consumption, on waste. So when we look at cost of living, we also have to look at cost of waste as well. So we want to reduce the everyday grocery cost for people, but we also want to lower the waste as well, usage. What we're seeing at the moment is that there time and time again is an increase of wastage when it comes to food, when it comes to groceries. So a lot of that comes down to the big grocers. So it doesn't come down to Cyril and his delivery and transportation. The onus goes back on the big suppliers and big producers as well. So making sure things are sustainable, we're trying to tackle it on their end rather than just
so one. Should the supermarket should pay more, should they?
Well, I think they should, to be honest. So, and we've never said they shouldn't. It shouldn't be passed on to the consumer at the end of the day. But going back to the initial points, we're looking at one thing in relation to cost of living. But you need to look at housing was one that was suggested. Childcare is another. But okay, the big thing is energy costs. We need to reduce energy costs across the board. We are making homes warmer across the board.
We'll come back to some of that, Hazel, too, in a few moments. I just want to bring in Lisa O'Sullivan-Shaw is with me, because Lisa's a mum of four. And, you know, Lisa, I suppose just like everybody in this room, whether you're lobbying or, you know, about any particular issue, or you have a main point that you want to make with politicians, you're a voter like the rest of us next Friday week. You have four kids. So what are you saying to politicians when they're knocking your door at home?
Hi, Andrea. So my main issue would be I represent probably like what I would call the squeezed middle, just the normal working family, four kids, living in rural Ireland as well, which I think a lot of people, a lot of politicians think there's nothing outside the Red Cow when, you know, there's...
You're Meath, aren't you?
I'm Meath, a Kerry woman.
You're right.
Living in Meath.
Living in Meath.
So I am a rural woman, but they're just, you know, I just want to know what is there for the likes of us. We are the ones that seem to pay everything. We're always just under the cutoff for everything. We don't seem to get anything back. What's coming back into our pocket? I mean, the USC charges, was that an austerity thing that was supposed to be gone? I just don't see anything coming back. It's like we are heads down, get out, go work, pay for this, pay for that. And nothing seems to come back to us. Rural Ireland, we have nothing. We have no amenities. We have no transport. We have, you know, everything is city centralised. You know, I could go on and on and on, but I have four young kids. I just want to be able to rear them in the way, you know, a fair way. Just fairness. And I want to know what will the likes of us, the normal working people of Ireland, get in this budget.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think it's a really interesting point, and I think that probably resonates with a lot of people listening to us today. We're just going to take a note of that. We are going to come back to that in a few moments to get an answer from politicians. I do just need to take a very quick break, but stay with us here on Lunchtime Live, where we want you to have your say about election 2024. You're very welcome back to Lunchtime Live's Election Town Hall with myself, Andrea Gilligan, where we're talking to our listeners, the voters, and some of our potential new members of the 34th Dáil ahead of general election 2024. It's 087 1400 106. As always, that's the WhatsApp number if you want to join us. We are going to come back to chat a little bit more about the cost of living, because that was mentioned here by quite a few of our listeners in the room today. But something that affects all of us at some stage of our life, or at least a family member, is access to healthcare. And this is something that our listeners have been telling me over the past few days that they want us to chat about today. So if you're a regular listener to this programme, you know that talking about access to cancer services and, you know, support services for carers is something that we chat about a lot on this programme. I've Tracy with me today from County Meath. Tracy, you're a carer. You care for your two kids. Your lovely daughter Willow is here with us as well today. But What change do you want to see in terms of the supports that might be there to help you when the next government is formed?
Well, we're constantly hearing the same narrative, the best country to live in and the best start for every child. But this does not apply to the most vulnerable members of society, and especially our children. We have a broken health system and we are failing our most vulnerable. The children's disability services are not fit for purpose. There's long waiting lists and inadequate therapeutic supports. Carers allowance is means tested with a minimal weekly payment if you get the full rate of €248. And the average cost of disability in a home is €244 per week. So we're forcing families into poverty. People that are providing 24/7 care and saving the state approximately €20 billion per annum. Caring for a child not only means the medical care, every aspect of that child's life is one battle after another. Therapies, health, and most importantly, education. We have a two-tiered model that excludes children with additional education needs, and they're not able to access the right to a high-quality education in their local school. Time after time, we hear the motions brought to the houses and they're just words blown on the breeze. So now we're in a really state of a fighting fire. Like, we're in an absolute state of crisis when it comes to family carers and children with additional needs. So I've read all the manifestos and I've heard the debates and I've listened to the promises, and it's almost like being handed the Smith's catalogue. Go away, pick your presents, and on Christmas Day, let's see if Santa delivers. And most times you're not going to get what you're looking for. So I'm asking every single party, with their manifestos and their promises, when it actually comes to the time that they're elected and they're holding those positions, will you really work to abolish the means tested for carers? Will you really develop a respite model that offers choice and equity and is person-centred? Will you address the pay parity within the disability services, allowing us to retain staff and actually fill those vacant positions? And create a permanent cost of disabilities, removing people from poverty, and most importantly, reform the education system. And we're calling for a citizens' assembly on education to allow us to develop an inclusive model for all children.
Yeah, I think you spoke really well, Tracy. Yeah, well done. Dáithí Doolan is a Sinn Féin councillor. You're a candidate, Dáithí, in the Ballyfermot Drimna area. I know your party's policy launch, the manifesto, is just out today. So what's in that that's going to address Tracy's concerns?
I think, well done, Tracy, for coming here. You'll be glad to know I've just come from a press conference where Sinn Féin launched our specific manifesto on disability. I think that goes to the very core of the type of Ireland we want to build, and it's down to those. I would encourage people, if they want change, they need to vote for Sinn Féin on the 29th.
But what will change, though?
Specifically, we will remove, and we're committed in black and white to removing the means testing for carers allowance. We're also we're going to address the where disabled people are locked into poverty because they can't access employment. Shockingly, this state has one of the highest rates of unemployment among those who are disabled. That needs to change. We need to allow people enter the workforce, make a contribution to society. We're also going to greatly increase the fund for local authorities to change the living houses for people. We want to make sure that there's training in place, education in place, that when people do get assessments, that they actually receive the services they deserve. I was out in the doors last night where particularly those parents with autistic children were heartbroken at the fact they can't even get assessments, and they borrow to get assessments, and then they find the HSE dismiss the assessments and they're back into the end of the queue again. That cannot be allowed to happen. And when they do get the assessments, the services need to be put in place. We need to increase great staffing levels. We need to increase education, quality of life, employment. We need parents to be supported. We need kids to feel part of our community, part of our society. In my area in Dublin South Central, it has the highest rate of people with disabilities in the whole country. So I see on a daily basis people locked into frustration, locked into poverty. And that's not by chance. It's nothing normal or natural about it. It's done by a systematic way, by barriers and blockages put in place of parents, of children, of people who are seeking employment, seeking education. And we want to change that. And we're saying to the people here today and those who are listening, you have those those choices on the 29th. More the same or something different. We had our manifesto launched today. I'll be happy to send that manifesto specifically on disability to the woman who's speaking here today and to anybody else, because it is absolutely imperative that we address this discrimination immediately.
Just on this, I've the Social Democrat TD and candidate in Wicklow, Jennifer Whitmore, is right beside Dahi as well. Just, I suppose, specifically to Tracy's points that she's mentioned, Jennifer, and we can go back to other issues a bit later. Are the Soc Dems going to be able to really address any of those concerns Tracy has?
Absolutely, and the Social Democrats are making the area of disabilities a priority for us. I want to thank Tracy for outlining her concerns. Social Democrats, the very first deal breaker that we spoke about when it comes to government formation is the provision of a senior cabinet minister for disabilities, because the reality is people with disabilities and their families have been failed repeatedly over the years.
Now, we do have a minister of state for the area of people living with disabilities.
We do, and in fact she has said that she can't get the HSC to meet with her in relation to some of the issues she wanted to raise. So I think when you have a minister for state, they are limited in what they can do because they're not a senior minister. You need to have that voice at the cabinet table, and you need someone who is fighting for people with disabilities and their families at the cabinet table, and that is a deal breaker for Social Democrats.
So you want an entire portfolio just for department for disabilities, or a sole senior minister for disabilities.
Absolutely, that is a key thing for us.
We're going to come back to a few more just on those points, because I just want to bring in, if I, Sharon Greaves with us as well. Is Sharon here? Sharon, how are you? How are you keeping? Thanks very much for joining us. I know, Sharon, you were diagnosed with cancer a number of years ago, and I know you spoke to us previously, and I appreciate you coming back and sharing that story with us again. You've gone through cancer treatment. I mean, you know the hospital and the system and the services inside out. I suppose a big issue for you that you mentioned to me previously, it's the cost of having cancer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know? Yeah. Thanks, Andrea. Yeah, I know. And thank you for highlighting this again today. According to the Irish Cancer website, the year I was diagnosed with cancer a couple of years ago, 45,000 people were diagnosed with cancer. 45,000. So as a result of my cancer, my income dropped considerably. I was 16 months having surgery, treatments, back and forward. Had to defer more. My mortgage went into debt. Well, all the expenses that were incurred, obviously I was out of work. So my estimated cost for my cancer journey by the time I was finished was with the hospital was several thousands. And when I started recovery, I was in debt. I had to go back to work earlier than I should have because I had to pay off some of these debts, obviously. And my credit rating is not good now. I'm now 18 months into a 10-year cancer treatment because I'm in a subgroup of a high risk of cancer reoccurrence. And my estimate is by the time I finish this treatment, hopefully I survive it, it will be up to €10,000 that I will have spent on treatment.
And I can only imagine, you know, Sharon, like, for you dealing with this ongoing, the worry and the concern, but just the financial worry about that, it must be absolutely incredible.
It is, it is. And obviously I'm hoping I will survive and I'll be able to, you know, pay all these debts and keep going. And I have a lot of responsibilities personally as well. So
it's a worry you don't need.
No. And I'm asking the next government that from the date of diagnosis for these 45,000 people and rising every year, that a medical card is issued immediately from the date of diagnosis. Even though my income dropped, I was slightly over the rate for the medical card. They were only looking at what was coming in, it wasn't looking going out. So I'm asking the next government to immediately issue medical cards for cancer patients.
Okay. Just on that, Sharon, thank you for sharing that story with us again, because our own political correspondent, Sean Defoe, is with me here. Sean's crunching the numbers, but I know this is a topic that is too close to your heart as well, but you can speak to Sharon.
Yeah, myself and Sharon, we were two of those 45,000 a year in the last little while, unfortunately. And I was in hospital this morning getting a checkup in relation to my own cancer diagnosis. And you're dead right that the financial thing is a whole other thing we don't really talk about, that just eats away at the back of your mind along with all the other stressors. So I've been paying quite a bit more attention to these manifestos and where They mention cancer. Some of them don't go into a lot of detail, maybe only one or two mentions talking about funding the National Cancer Strategy, Labour, and a couple of the others are promising new screening programmes because we are seeing cancer in younger and younger people. Unfortunately, I'm the prime example of that. 30 years old when I got my own diagnosis, and particularly in relation to bowel, we're seeing that. So bowel check to be expanded. An interesting one on the financials from the Fianna Fáil manifesto actually is legislating for a right to be forgotten for cancer survivors, because it doesn't end even after you're over it. If you're trying to get insurance, if you're trying to get a mortgage,
it's a huge issue.
It's a huge issue. And I'm thankful we got a mortgage before I got sick. Probably wouldn't be able to get one now. So one of the ones in there is if your treatment has ended more than 7 years prior to application, it would be discarded. You'd have a right to be forgotten as a cancer patient.
And just to Sharon about the medical card and the means, has that been mentioned much in the launches?
I haven't. I'm open to correction from anyone on the floor. It has Independent Ireland there.
Yeah, go on ahead. Sorry, I have, of course, our independent candidate with us, Fergus MacDonald, who is from County Offaly, and I suppose you're part of the Independent Ireland grouping. But what are you promising Sharon and many others?
Well, that very point that Sharon brought up, unfortunately, so many people are suffering with cancer. And I know it from our own family experience. Thankfully, I have a very close relation that's 13 years surviving cancer. But for a long number of weeks now, Independent Ireland has that very one nailed, that on the minute a diagnosis is made of a patient for cancer, they have an automatic entitlement for a medical card. And the same with the carer's allowance. That issue of carer's allowance, and I'm speaking from the personal side of it, because I was a carer to my late mother along with my wife for 18 years. So I've walked that walk. I'm a transport driver for special needs children. I see the whole spectrum there, and there needs to be a huge change in direction. And we would say in Independent Ireland, common sense has to apply right throughout the system. So that's what we're advocating.
Okay. I am just going to take a very short break. We have to just for the moment, but I am going to, when we come back, I just want to chat to Maria Steins is with me as well from Care Champions. And I just am going to talk to Maria in a few moments. We're just going to take a very short break, but do stay with us here in Lunchtime Live's Town Hall, where we want you to have your say ahead of general election 2024. Yes, you're welcome back to Lunchtime Live's Election Town Hall here with myself, Andrea Gilligan, where we're talking to listeners and some of our potential New Dáil members ahead of general election 2024 on Friday week, the 29th of November. But today we're talking to voters, our listeners, to hear about the issues that matter most to them in this election. So joining me, I have Maria Steins, who's with me. Maria is a spokesperson for Care Champions. And I know you're here with Geraldine, who's with you as well today. This is something that both of you guys have been affected by, and that's the nursing home closures. So what do you want from the potential makeup of the next government, Maria?
It is, and I think it's an issue that more people than we realise are dealing with in the country. My question would be that HICWA and others have repeatedly warned about the growth and the over-reliance on profit-making private nursing home sector. And we now see that the predicted collapse of the business model when profits reduce causes nursing homes to close, and frail people are experiencing transfer trauma. How will you ensure that older people who need residential care receive safe, seamless care from a state-owned and run home?
Okay. Well, Labour councillor and candidate in Dublin South West, Ciarán Ahern, is with us here today. Ciarán, do you want to respond to Maria's question today?
Yeah, thanks very much. I mean, look, I shouldn't be, but I'm probably still astounded by just how many people are losing faith in the ability of our system to respond to their very basic needs. And we do need to restore trust with people when it comes to autism services, when it comes to provision of institutional care, and when it comes to retaining our graduates, as we spoke about earlier. We need to tackle the costs of living really by the provision of better public services. We need to regain that trust. So, I mean, there is an increasing divide. Again, there's a two-tier system. When it comes to access to cancer drugs, for example, the access to those drugs is restricted by being in the public system versus in the private system. We need to change that. We want to see a Sláinte Care transition plan. We Sláinte Care is this apparent cross-party plan that we all agree that there should be a single tier healthcare system. It was supposed to be implemented over the course of this government. It hasn't been. We want a plan to actually see where we are now and invest money into getting that done to ensure that people aren't forced to rely on private services, private nursing homes that are run for profit.
Is there anything in your manifesto, though, that will actually, you know, deal with Maria's issue, though, particularly around nursing homes?
I'll have to check that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, But it's, I suppose it's the issue of the provision of, you know, nursing home for people in nursing homes for their family members. Like, I suppose it's something that affects everybody in every constituency in the country. Is it a priority for Labour? Is it down the list? Where is it?
It is a priority for us. I suppose what we want also is people to be able to get care at home and not have to rely on nursing homes. And to, for example, when it comes to the Fair Deal scheme, to be able to use that for care in the home.
So one of the other points I just want to come back to just for a moment, I just want to, and I'm going to ask all of our politicians, or maybe if you disagree, you might let us know to tell us why. And that was to just Tracy's point around the means testing for carers. Is there anybody here who disagrees with that? So all politicians are, Tracy, just to maybe to summarise that one point on the means testing for politicians. Again, you want it brought in.
Well, basically, you know, we're carers' allowances and social protection. We're not, you know, sitting at home not doing anything. Carers are working 24/7. There's no start. There's no finish. There's no support and there's no resources. So it's me ensuring Willow lives. That is the gravity of the situation in our house. I could be up all night, all day. I love her. I want to do it. Mm. I had a full, you know, life, a career, the day Willow was born, which was actually our medical negligence case was settled last month.
Okay.
So the state failed her birth. Okay. And the minute she was in care, everything in her life is tested on the means of my husband's income, not taking into account the cost of disability in the home and the physical, mental and social pressures around that. So carer's allowance should be assessed on the needs of that person.
Is there anybody not agreeing with this?
I'm hoping everyone agrees that means testing should be abolished. But on top of agreeing, we need to also say, what can we provide you, Tracy? So it's not just saying we abolish means testing. It's saying then, what are we going to bring in? And we have time and time again for the Green Party say we need a universal basic income for carers.
And is everybody in agreement with that?
It should be more, because we brought in, we were the party who brought in a universal basic income for artists, and it actually worked really well.
Are you doing it for carers? Is that your plan?
We want it for carers. Okay. And also, the disability tax should be $3,800, at least one-off payment.
Okay. Let me just I want to come back just to one other point, because it was just something we mentioned in the first section, and it was to Lisa O'Sullivan-Shaw's point around the squeezed middle, and what are we going to do about the squeezed middle, and who's going to look after them? And really, Lisa, like as you mentioned earlier, it's not, you've no one big issue, but you're probably speaking for a lot of voters and a lot of our listeners who, you know, you want a bit more money in your pocket at the end of the month.
Yeah, Andrea, it's not really that, you know, 5 euro here and 5 euro there is of no use to us, really. You know, we want something that is more substantial in our pocket every week. Just, you know, as I said, we're just at a group that we're just above the threshold of getting the likes of the medical cards. I mean, I could sit here and list, like, as a family of six people, you know, extension of the GP cards for children. You know, that's a whole other issue, really, with healthcare.
Let me just bring in Eimear Tobin, who's a councillor and candidate in Meath East. You're representing Aintu, Eimear. You're pretty close to Lisa's home base. You know, how do you address those issues that she mentions, and particularly for people living in rural areas?
Yeah, no, it's an issue that come up at a lot of doors, because there's such a huge number of the population squeezed in the middle, and there's just no relief whichever way they look. And I suppose it's about tackling the issues of the cost of living. It's about childcare costs. It's about transport costs. It's all the big ticket items that is making life so, so difficult for everyone, but particularly the squeezed middle, because there's no disposable income left at the end of a month in terms of, you know, trying to get all the different things for the family. But if we look at I suppose, the childcare issue, which is a huge thing, Ireland has just kind of talked about this. Every 5 years, there's a big discussion of who's doing what in their manifesto, but nothing ever translates into action. So I just think this time, once and for all, every party has to come together and you know, talk about a public service, and to give people who work in that area a proper salary so they can stay in that job.
We are actually going to talk specifically about childcare just after 1 o'clock. But Sean, you took a note as well. A lot of our listeners here today on the rent that we first mentioned and the issues around tax credits for that. And we want to hear a little bit more from politicians too.
Absolutely, yeah. That was one of the first points raised and it's been in on the text lines on 087 1400 106. Andrea, we live down the country. My daughter graduated from Temple Moor in September and was posted to Dublin, given 2 weeks' notice to get accommodation. She's getting married and trying to save. Both her and her partner are paying a mortgage, loves the work as a guard, but considering if she can afford to stay in the Gardaí, now looking at other jobs, already 4 Gardaí gone from her class for this reason. What will any new government do to stop this retention crisis in the Gardaí? Headquarters won't even entertain a transfer down the country.
Okay, so we might maybe just chat about the crime element of it, but on the rental issue that was raised too by some of our listeners and the tax credits, I suppose, that are on offer for that.
Yes, yeah, so the tax credits, a lot of the parties promising to raise them and in various proportions, either increasing them linked to the consumer price index or doubling them or bumping up to some number. There are problems with actually getting them. I think one of the big problems that I see in particular as someone watching all my friends try to buy houses is there is very little in particularly the main government party manifestos about reducing the cost of housing. So you've almost got two ideological blocks. A lot of the smaller and lefter parties are promising state construction company, state to get more involved and you bring down prices that way. On the other side, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil and Greens brought in obviously the Help to Buy scheme and then this shared equity scheme. And Sinn Féin then promising the affordable housing scheme where you won't own the land under the house, but you will own the land and that or will own the house and that brings down the cost. Both sort of amount to the same thing in that at the end of the day, you have a big chunk of either your home or the land under it that you don't own, that you have to buy the state out of if you want to sell it. So I suppose the question nearly for the government parties is, whoever wants to take this up, what do you actually see prices coming down? Are you not just subsidising higher prices increasing and increasing over the next few years?
Shane Moynihan, do you want to... Sorry, apologies, respond to Sean on that.
So I think key to this is there's two aspects to our policy on housing. One is about increasing the supply of homes, which we have done since coming into government, and we will ramp that up to 60,000 homes by 2030, which will moderate the overall level of price. But the second is to maintain the affordability for people. Ultimately, both the Help to Buy and the First Home Scheme allow that option for people to buy back later on in their career. But the important thing for first-time buyers is to get onto the property ladder and is to buy that first home. And we know that 500 couples a week are doing just that. So both in terms of expansion of the supply of houses that are available and making them affordable, they need to be the twin track approach we have to improving housing supply. In addition to that, then as well, speaking specifically about what came into the text line, we also need to have a laser focus, as we have had for the last while, on the provision of cost rental. And we have rolled out more cost rental units across the piece, and we also plan to introduce measures to make it easier for renters to become buyers as well.
Just on that, and Dahi, as we mentioned, your party's manifesto or launch unveiled today. What do you say to the renters that are tuned into us this afternoon?
Well, first of all, I think we need change and we need to stop punishing people. Stop punishing people with astronomical rents, with astronomical housing prices.
But just we'll say specifically to the policy, what helps them?
On rent, what we do is a rent freeze, reintroduce the ban on no-fault evictions so people are secure in their home. And the most traumatic things any child or any adult will face is eviction and homelessness. And we've got to break that spiral of intergenerational trauma by ensuring they can remain safe in their home. We also need to ensure that public servants, Gardaí, teachers, firefighters can afford to live in Dublin. They cannot afford to live in Dublin. They're being squeezed out. They go home to Cavan or off to Qatar. That's not good for this city. We need a safer city where public servants, be a teacher or a nurse or a doctor, can live here. But what we would do is put €1,000 back in renters' pockets. Hi. And we would ensure that they can get the cash back, to put it back.
How are you doing that though, Dahi?
Have a rent freeze. And also, key to this is assuring delivery. Rather than tax breaks, we need delivery of affordable to rent, affordable to buy and council housing. And we're promised 125,000 homes to be built by 2029, not by private developers, okay. By state intervention.
I just want to give a note on this just from the independent section to Councillor Fergus MacDonald from Independent Ireland. Like, if the Independent Ireland candidates, the alliance or the grouping, form part of the next coalition or are in the 34th Dáil, for the renters, what are you saying to them? And I suppose not just those in rural Ireland.
Well, the whole situation of housing, not just the renters, has to be looked at in its entirety, because whether it's social housing, renting, and there's a huge amount of people caught in that locked into that zone where they're above the threshold, and awfully for social housing, unfortunately, the threshold is €30,000. I've had people come to me that are €100, €60, €20 over the limit. They can't get a social house, and they're locked into the rent, and they'll never achieve a mortgage in their own right. So for those people, there has to be a look at the entire system, see where it can cuts can be made to make it more affordable. But I do think on a general note that the social housing threshold has to be increased substantially, because it's a way of actually keeping the social housing figures deliberately low.
Now, we are going to talk about childcare, school places. Also, crime is a big issue too for a lot of our listeners. We have been talking about healthcare services. We've been chatting about the cost of living, which affects everybody. But another issue that affects so many of the Lunchtime Live listeners, and that's everything to do with school. It's childcare, it's school places, crash places, and all that goes with that. I'm delighted to say we've Avril Sheenan and Anne Quirk. Avril runs the Care A Lot Childcare in County Cork. Anne Quirk is with her from the Corbally Montessori as well in Cork too. But Avril, we hear a lot about the cost of childcare and how expensive that is for so many people in this room. But I wonder, what will create more space for the likes of you and Anne in your childcare settings in Cork?
Well, I think just from reading the manifestos and stuff like that, I think every party is being ill-advised, number one. With the Fianna Fáil manifesto, it's stating, well, they're kind of all the similar, going for a public system model. This isn't going to work. There's community services, I think there's like six in the last four years, who are 95% funded by the department after closing down, and numerous private services as well. So, yes, ye are after looking after the parents with the NCS with a 50% reduction. Yes, ye can give them more, absolutely. And that is welcomed. And we want to get more relief for parents because they are paying out way too much. Now, number two, it's not coming in to private providers like myself to fund us to pay the staff accordingly. So then the staff are leaving the sector. They don't want to, you know, work. Even in one of the manifestos, it's saying, let's do an earn and learn, I think. So it's like an apprenticeship they want to bring in. That's not going to work. Over the last 16 years, I have spent thousands in educating my staff to level eight and level nine. Thereafter, moving on to better, you know, S&A jobs and into the primary school sector and stuff like that. So now they're taking two steps back from this manifesto and what I've read, two steps back to unqualified staff. And remember, there is a legal regulation there that a level five has to be the minimum requirement. Yeah. So like, where are they going with this? Like, most of the stuff on the Fianna Fáil manifesto, and I'm kind of picking on you now at the moment, right? Because I think it needs to be brought up. Anything that you have in your like affordability and accessibility and all the rest, it's already there in place, but it needs to be tweaked. The NCS is working very well, and we see that, but it puts pressure administration on the likes of myself and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So this needs to be looked at.
Okay.
Stop looking at Scandinavia. Stop looking at the Canadian model.
Well, if you want the Scandinavian model, then voters need to be prepared to pay more. Like,
absolutely.
The higher taxes. That's just the reality of it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, I just want to bring in on this. I've Ciarán Ahern, who's the Labour councillor and candidate in Dublin South West. So if you want to answer Avril's points, how are you going to address the availability, the space issues that we have in crèches around the country, Ciarán?
Yeah, well, I'm the father of a 2.5-year-old and we have another on the way. This is an acute issue for me as well, but all for my friends and family and for different generations, because if you can't get childcare, which so many people can't, they can't get it because it's not available in their area or they can't afford it. So we do have to change something about the system because it is not working in its current form. We want a public childcare model where these teachers of our children are earlier educators, are employed directly by the state, and they're given a good wage. They are incentivized to stay in the area, and then we can create new childcare locations co-located on sites with primary schools with ETBs. We want
so child creches would sort of become swallowed up, and in the same way as you have primary school, you'd go to the creche first, will you?
Yes, we want early years education to be treated more like primary school, where we value it as a society, where we are willing to put money into it, okay, and where we pay people good wages, and it is affordable and accessible for parents. There are places.
Avril, though, you don't think that's the solution, do you?
Absolutely not. We know from data and reports there's enough ECCE places there at the moment for children. Where the spaces are lacking are for the under threes, and we're getting no support because I'm not on core funding, right, and not underneath that
grant that we're getting from the department. Yeah. I can't apply for any of the grants. So I am caught in every situation. Then I'm stuck underneath an ERO. So like for me to get a loan, it's really hard because I'm not taking in that much profit. And I can't apply for any of the grants available either to expand my service.
Okay.
So they are catching me. And it's like being discriminated against, okay. really, being honest.
Let me just bring in Ruth Coppinger, who's the People Before Profit Solidarity candidate. Like, what's your, I suppose, how, what prospects have you for both Anne and Avril that are with us this afternoon, Ruth?
My concern is for parents and children and people who need childcare. So you cannot provide childcare at a profit. That's just the reality of it. It's just like primary school or secondary school. In fact, it's even less likely you can make a profit off it unless you actually fleece parents or screw the workers. So we've been saying for a long number of years, and it's great that all the parties are now jumping on board. I've always advocated that early years education is critical in the development of any human being and any child, and it should be provided free by the state in the same way the primary school is and secondary school is.
Now, does that mean that Anne just comes in, Anne and Avril come into the catchment? That is that what you want, Anne? Do you want to come into the catchment of like a public education early years model?
No, the public the at the moment the ECC, we get $64.50 a week for a child. So we're supposed to pay highly qualified graduate staff levels out of that, pay all our costs, our running costs for the whole business for $64.50. That $64.50 hasn't changed since 2010 when it was implemented first day. The cost of living has gone up, the cost of everything has gone up, and I'm supposed to operate a business, pay all my insurance, cover all my costs out of $64.50 a week.
It shouldn't be a business, that's the point. The point is that it shouldn't be a business. All of care is being made a commodity. So if the state was running this, we could keep insurance very low. We could keep electricity costs low. We could keep all of those costs low. I do agree a lot of the schools could be shared facilities because you have, you know, you just have the space. As it is, most schools do have after school privately. But we now have to invest to create this. And by the way, just one sentence. All the parties are saying they'll do this. People shouldn't believe them. They said the same about Sláintecare.
Well, let me just hear. I just want to hear another party. What, Jennifer Whitmore, what are you saying to Avril and Anne on the childcare? There's plenty of other childcare providers listening to us, but just when they're both here today.
Absolutely. So Social Democrats also want to see a public model of childcare. And that's been something since our very foundation. It's been a key principle of ours. I think it's clear that the current system isn't working. The way the government has been subsidising the current model of early years, it's not working for parents, it's not working for children, it's not working for the staff within the sector, and it's also not working for the small providers because they're actually getting squeezed out of the system. It's pretty much unaffordable for them at the moment. And the only people who seem to be making money out of it are the large corporates. And similar to, you know, we believe that when it comes to the element of care, that actually it needs to be a public model. When everything we're hearing today in relation to healthcare, education, housing, all these issues are very basic public services.
But can the state afford to provide all of these services?
Absolutely. We are a wealthy country. And actually, by providing these services, what you do is you're reducing costs for people, say the likes of Lisa. Lisa's talking about public transport, about education, about healthcare. Mm-hmm. Like, you need the state to pool its money and actually invest in public services so it can meet those needs. The one-off payments that we've seen from government, they're welcome in the immediate, you know, when people yeah. receive them, but they don't last. They're gone pretty much within a week or a month. So we need the state to actually okay. invest and use its money carefully, because what we don't want in 10 years' time is to look back and think, geez, what did we do yeah, with all okay. that money we had?
Just on that, like, Grace, you've been listening to Ruth and Jennifer Whitmore both talking about this publicly funded model. Like, Fine Gael obviously in power for well over a decade at this stage, but like, that's something that your focus hasn't been on. I appreciate you're a first-time candidate. Do you want to see it in a publicly funded way?
Well, what I would say is I'm a mum of 7-year-old twin girls, so I have lived the childcare issues, and I have also seen the amazing work that our preschools and Montessori's do. I do think there's a difference between childcare and early learning educators. The standard of qualification in early learning educators is much higher, and we need to support those early learning educators. They're educating the next generation. In terms of moving fully to a publicly funded childcare early learning system, In the last week in my constituency, two planning applications for large creches have been lodged. If we are threatening to move to a fully publicly funded childcare system, those applications are going to go nowhere. We're going to stall. We're going to stall building. We actually have to work with the private providers, and we have to deliver more facilities, public facilities on public land, but we have to, that's a complement. There's huge demand for childcare facilities, and we have to complement what's already there, not replace it or terrify them at moving to a publicly funded model.
Just, you know, it's funny when you listen to people talking about the fight for places and the availability of places within the early years centres or whatever, I suppose, name maybe we might want to call them. But it's not a fight that ends, as a lot of you know, after preschool. It seems to be a constant problem. That's what I hear in the show anyway, day in, day out. And I've Pamela Kenny. Is Pamela with us as well? Pamela, how are you? And thanks for joining us here today, because I know you've two children waiting on school places. Isn't that right? And you're part of the Tala Parents Autism Support Group. So, you know, you're now into the, I suppose, the primary school, early year part of attending school, and you can't get places. So is there anything you want specifically from the next government to try and create more seats in the classroom?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing first is that, I suppose, my son, we applied to every secondary school south of the Liffey. So from Lucan as far as Glenageary and Bray, we applied to every school that had autism classes. He didn't get a single offer for last year. So now I had no choice. It was either try mainstream or leave him at home on home tuition, which I don't think was fair, or, you know, it wasn't be fair to him. So we are trying mainstream. We are literally stressed every day. He is stressed every day. It's even the first year, but I am now making applications again for next year to see if he can get a place for his second year. But it doesn't look like it'll probably happen.
How many applications have you put in?
I put in 20. The problem is there's so few secondary schools with autism classes. I mean, at the moment, there are about 1,000 schools, primary schools, who have autism classes, which is only about 30% of all primary schools in the country have autism classes.
Okay.
But at secondary school, there's only 434 schools who have autism classes. So you have, it's like the Hunger Games. You have, you know, 1,000 autism classes, pupils all applying for the same 430-odd places at secondary. And it's just not possible. It's not viable.
No, and it's, so you mentioned you've applied for your child, you've applied to 20 schools.
For my son. My daughter's still in fourth class. We're okay and there for now.
How many rejection letters?
Well, to be honest, I probably only got about 10 rejection letters.
Only 10?
The rest all I had to phone. They didn't even bother to send one in the post to me.
Right. You see, that's the issue, isn't it? You know, it's... You're speaking for a lot of our listeners today in talking about that.
It is, and I think from the next government, we need less spin. We need a proactive approach. We need an ambitious plan. There's 2,300 schools, primary schools in this country that do not have a single autism class.
Okay.
Why can't we have a plan to open a class in every school?
Yeah.
There are only 700 secondary schools in the country. So realistically, we need at least 4 autism classes in every secondary school. That's what we need as a minimum.
Let's put that particular point, Pamela, I should say, to our ANTHU candidate here, Emer Tobin. Like, can you create more classes for children who have autism in the secondary schools across the country, or how do ANTHU propose to do that, Emer?
Well, we know that the numbers of children diagnosed with autism has really, really gone up in the last 10 years, but there has been no matching educational places put in. And you can hear the utter frustration in that lady's voices. And I would have taught children with autism a good number of years ago, and I would have been every step of the way with those parents, as they literally have to knock their head off a brick wall trying to get the basics for their children. So it's not, are we going to do this? This has to be done, because there's a huge demand for it, and it is making life extremely difficult for parents. And those children are never going to reach their potential unless there is a serious efforts put into this. But with regard to the whole childcare cases as well for children or children with autism, the Irish government has always fallen below the amount of money that should be invested in this area. They say it should be minimum about 0.8% of GDP. Ireland puts in about 0.3% of GDP.
But what will ANTHU put in, though, Emer?
We are going to do what needs to be done to give parents a proper opportunity to have their children looked after. because the cost of not doing it is going to be far, far greater. And for parents who want to be able to get out to work, the money is going to come back into the system to pay for those services. So this government always has this short-term way of doing things, but in the end, it costs far, far more because the supports aren't put in there from day one.
But if it's a case that Aintu were to return a number of TDs in the next all, right, and you make up a section of this 34th new government that we'll have probably likely in the new year, how are you going to create these spaces, though, for Pamela and other listeners today?
If and when... Look, you see the numbers of children that need these places. So it is a matter of investing money into schools for classrooms for these children. These children have the exact same entitlement to education. So it's not a matter of should those children get it, should these other children not get it. All children are entitled. All children should get it. It shouldn't be, do we spend the money or do we not? These children should be taught in the exact proper setting that suits their needs, and it gets factored into the educational budget, as does every child's educational needs into the budget.
There's a listener here just behind you who just wants to make a quick point. Sorry, just what's your name, first of all?
Lisa Domican.
Oh, Lisa, how are you? Yeah. So you just want to make a quick point with regards to the school places, Lisa?
Yeah, I want to agree wholeheartedly. It's not just the Hunger Games, it's Groundhog Day. Like, my kids were in the system in 2002. I've got two adult kids with autism and challenging needs. And every single minister who is responsible for the issues today hasn't been in the room with people with our needs. And that's what needs to change here. Who was in the room when they decide that they're not going to open enough autism classes? Who's in the room when they decide that carers are a cost to the community and we must make sure they're not cheating the system, instead of saying, this is an asset that saves us millions? Who's in the room when we say that someone who's just been diagnosed with cancer doesn't get a medical card, doesn't get the best possible care? Because as a community, Ireland has proved itself to be very caring, okay, as a nation. Yeah, yeah. And yet our government doesn't see us that way. They see us as something that can be used but not rewarded.
Okay, well, we're going to come back, and thank you, Lisa, for making that point. We're just going to come back maybe, and we might even get some of our government politicians to respond to Lisa's points, and we're just going to take a very short break. But stay with us here on Lunchtime Live's Town Hall, where we want you to have your say ahead of general election 2024. Now, one thing we talk about an awful lot on this show, and it's something that was raised by many of our listeners when we've been asking you to get in touch over the past few weeks, and that's crime. It's not just a Dublin issue, it's an issue in every single town and city centre right across this country. Shane Gleeson is with me today. Shane runs five different spar shops in Limerick City. And Shane, I know I've spoke to you many times before. You've had dreadful problems, I suppose, with dealing with threatening behaviour, the cost of shoplifting. So what are you asking the politicians in Limerick to do to try and tackle, you know, really the issues that are affecting your business?
My business, to be fair now, are the exact same in all, as you said, the towns, the cities, even the smaller towns. We have a particular problem with retail crime. There is no effective deterrence for the people who carry out these crimes. They don't go to prison. They get fines in court that they don't pay. They're back robbing us fairly much immediately. Like, we had a particular lady that was quite violent. She got 6 months in prison, and within 4 days she was back out again and robbing us again. The same lady now would have, and I won't name her, but she did things like put a barrel through the window of Brown Thomas. Like, she's quite a violent lady. This we're seeing again and again and again, and it's a safety issue. Our staff need to feel safe at work. Our customers need to feel safe in the streets. We need something done in reality that prevents it. One of the things we've suggested before is the possibility of, when they are fined, if that could go directly to their social welfare and maybe reduce it by a quarter, that might send a signal that would reduce it. Mm-hmm. Most of our... Now, I don't know how effective it would or wouldn't be. Most of our problems are coming from the drug area, obviously. And it's the same issue across the state, as far as we can see.
Just remind listeners, you gave me a fairly staggering statistic a couple of months back when you told me about the actual cost to your business of shoplifting.
We're looking at, per store, and especially in the city centre stores, we're looking roughly 50,000 a year is what we're losing.
And you have five stores.
And we have five stores.
So that's quarter of a million is the cost of your purse.
And I can assure you, I don't take anything like that home.
No, it's like
the vast majority
statistic
of our money is going out the door. But the same is true right around the whole country. You know, the levels I'm facing aren't any different to anybody else. We've invested in CCTV. The Gardaí work very carefully with us. there's a massive issue in that there aren't enough Gardaí available. When they come, they're very good. But there's two cars available for Limerick City, and the Chief Super has told us before, for Limerick City, really, you need maybe 10 cars. That's the disparity in the reality on the ground.
Yeah, I know Paul Gallagher is with us as well. Paul, you're listening to Shane, and you run Skechers shops around the country. I remember talking to you, actually. Your shop is the Asics store, isn't that right? In Henry Street in Dublin, a big focus after the Dublin riots.
Yeah, the O'Connell Street one.
That's
there.
Right,
yeah.
Last November.
Yeah.
I remember talking to you at the time. Like, I'm sure everything, you know, Shane has mentioned is resonates with you.
It does, and there's an increasing amount of aggressive lawlessness among them, right? I mean, staff are getting kicked, pushed, spat at. You know, they're actually afraid to come into work now, and it's a kind of shame on the government. The Gardaí, when they do come, I agree with Shane, they will sometimes share their frustrations. The government has a justice system that's completely unfit for purpose, right? It's archaic, antiquated, and Minister McAtee was... this was put to Minister McAtee, and she said, oh, we're aware of all the problems. Well, if she's aware, why isn't she doing something about it, right? Because we believe that, like, there's a common denominator with all the frustrations here. For the last 40 years, you have the same civil service and government. The healthcare doesn't work, the transport system doesn't work, the Gardaí, you know, the housing. Mm. We have the same civil service. There's no test and measure on it, but no accountability. And then there's no consequences for the people who have crime. They come out, revolving door system, and they walk out the door, and they're putting two fingers at the Gardaí that arrested them two days
earlier. And as Shane mentioned, they're back, you know, in some cases, but they're like, back in
we
to
have
same issues
a,
again
a,
through the
a
door.
A certain amount of lawlessness. And we walk outside the GPO and the O'Connell Street, and you can see them drug dealing openly, right? Mm. And they don't care, and absolutely... And because a lot of it's drug related, as Shane said, the level of aggressiveness, like they're going in brazenly stealing bundles of high end stuff and running out the door, and they absolutely don't care.
Just on that, because I know all of the politicians want to get in on this, but Sean Dufour, political correspondent, like, you've been looking through all of the manifestos and what the parties and independents are promising with regards to crime, but is there any one thing sticks out as maybe a big change or shift in tackling crime in Ireland?
Look, there's quite a lot across all the different parties, and it varies because crime is so widespread, from what to do with people who protest outside of homes, which we've seen in front of politicians, to wildlife crime and a wildlife crime unit. I think the Social Democrats are promising, I suppose, the most eye-catching, or two most eye-catching ones I've seen from the bigger parties. One, a new Department of Domestic Affairs is what Fianna Fáil wants to set up under the remit of the Minister for Justice, sort of like the Home Office in the UK, but with more of a focus on crime. And then Fine Gael had quite an extensive policy launch on crime that includes the rollout of Gardaí or body cams to all Gardaí. It includes a new offence for retail crime that would carry an extra penalty of up to an extra year in prison, and then the use of facial recognition technology, widespread use for serious crime by Gardaí, and in the use of live facial recognition technology in cases of terrorism, national security and missing persons.
Yeah, just on that, like, would that change, facial recognition technology, is that what you want to see brought in, the extra year potential sentence?
Absolutely. They have brought it in England, and England, by the way, have the exact same situation we have. They have 8 or 9 thefts per shop per week is kind of common there, which is the same as what we have. Facial recognition is a fantastic facility if it is used. We do already use it in one of our stores. So if you rob today and you come in tomorrow, well, you get a little bit of a warning at the till. So because we have the same people who come in maybe 4 times a day, the same people that will assault our staff, push, shove, kick, spit in our faces. At least we get a warning when they come through the door, because they'll try and sneak in behind a crowded lunchtime, say, or whatever.
Yeah.
And then if my staff try and confront them, my son got headbutted, I've been punched in the face. 4 weeks ago, an individual who should have been in jail because he put a hammer into a fella's head during a burglary, he then produced a knife with me. He'd been given 6 years in jail 3 years ago, and he's out.
So just to some of those issues, Shane, I just want to quickly across our politicians that are here, is there anybody against the use of facial recognition, as Sean Dufour has mentioned, and this additional 1 year minimum sentencing for serial shoplifters, if we want to call them that? Who's against it? Ruth Coppinger.
Well, it depends on the nature of the shoplifting. One of the increased intake into prisons lately has been women. And 95% of that is related to petty crime. A lot of that is related to the fact we have a major housing crisis, a huge growth in inequality and poverty. So I think it depends. I don't think you can just have a minimum sentence. I think, you know, prisons should be reserved for violent crime, for example. We need to introduce a whole range.
Shane Gleeson's a quarter of a million at a loss. Like, that's the loss he's just told us about as a result of aggressive theft in his stores.
And I'm sure it varies in gravity and in amount. What I'm saying is I would not be in favour of a across-the-board minimum one-year jail sentence for shoplifting. No.
Anybody else?
Teenagers as well, by the way.
Just I'm interested. Dahi Doolan, just quick mention and then Hazel Chu.
Quick mention. After 13 years of Fine Gael Ministers for Justice, I think people feel abandoned. Businesses, homes, families, the public. And in relation to simply a 12-year sentence, they are supported. People earlier on mentioned a lot of it around drug addiction. I work in addiction services, and if we put more money into rehabilitation, into prevention, by its very nature, you'd have a lot less shoplifting. So rather than building more prisons and filling them up and they become universities of crime, let's tackle the causes and the consequences. And it's not just about we can simply police our way out of it. There's a record number of Gardaí have resigned to date this year as of 31st of July, 83. Okay. But also we need community Gardaí, investment in community Gardaí, okay, to build bridges, build relationships with the communities that they are representing.
Just Hazel Chu, just a quick point on that, because just a couple of other areas in crime I want to touch on as well.
So to Dahi's point about community Gardaí, I think community Gardaí is across the board. Him and I sit on the Joint Policing Commission. They've been massively under resources. So resourcing of Gardaí is one. Making sure that it's not about sentencing, it's about having enough judges in court,
so
as
are
well.
Are you against then an additional minimum sentencing regards to shoplifting?
The first one. We go back to the first one about FRT. Facial recognition technology doesn't always work. It is a prevention, perhaps, but statistics around the world have showed the false positives. There's a reason we're against it, because if you want to actually capture the perpetrator of crime, you need to actually capture the right person. So in a lot of cases, it doesn't work properly. Okay. And the best thing that would work is prevention of crime to the person that's losing loads of money and actually getting attacked. And to prevent that from happening is having Gardaí, having community Gardaí work with them, but we don't have enough of that.
So it's just community Gardaí, Paul Gallagher. You're shaking your head.
I'm sorry, but you're slightly... the amount of Gardaí that come in, right, and they're very helpful, right? But in O'Connell Street, where do community Gardaí come into it? Like, you should see the aggression that comes into the stores. I'm sorry now, but you need to get real on this one. There's a sense when you see a young teenager working in a store part-time trying to pay for college fees and gets a headbutt, right? It just makes your blood boil. Now, please, I didn't interrupt you, right? So the Gardaí are an essential part, but the Gardaí need extra powers. These people, there's a lawlessness and a recklessness out there that these people here obviously aren't spending enough time on the streets
looking at it. Very quick point, just want to bring Shane Moynihan in on this, and I just want to touch on a different crime issue then. Just Shane, if you want to respond specifically there to Paul and Shane Gleeson.
So I'm the chair of the South Dublin Joint Policing Committee, and I hear exactly what Paul's saying, that we need to increase the core Garda force. We've whittled it down by putting them into different units over the last few years. So 5,000 extra Gardaí is something we prioritise, but also increase the penalty on threatening and abusive behaviour in public places as well, which complements the shoplifting piece too. Dahi's right, there is no silver bullet to this, but to suggest that Garda and policing and penalties don't have a role in it, I think, isn't really estimating the problem. We need to deal with what I hear from people on a daily basis is an antisocial behaviour problem. Okay. People feel unsafe in the places they're going, and we need to rebuild that, both that respect and partnership between Garda and their communities too.
Just on that and feeling safe, I've Kabir is with us as well today, and I appreciate you coming in to join us, because you work for Transdev, isn't that right? You've been a Lewis driver for quite a number of years, or working with the Lewis. A transport police, like, you know firsthand what crime is like in Dublin city centre. Is that something you think we need?
Thanks, Adrian. Yeah. To be honest with you, we need a proper transport police, because the crime level is huge, high, very high now at the moment. It's very difficult for us to deal with them. You know, security is a main issue for us. Like, and as the gentleman said, they can just come around, assault you and walk away from you. We can't do anything really. So it's very, very difficult for us. I suppose if we get transport police, it'll be the best for us going forward.
Yeah, because you've first-hand experience, Kabir, haven't you?
Yeah.
Like, what the aggression is like in Dublin city centre.
It's amazing, unbelievable, the way people just look at you. And it's not about... I'm talking about across the grade now, regardless who you look like. The major thing is a drug, smoking on the tram and all the vaping as well. Mm. I can give you a very good experience last night. A couple of young, kids on the tram vaping and smoking. There's nothing we can do, really. If you call the guard, they never show up. If the guard show up, eventually, they deal with the situation very well.
Yeah.
But I think we don't have enough resources for the guard. So that is why we launched Transport Police for the last couple of
that's
months.
That's what you want, Transport
that's
Police.
That's what we're going forward. Yeah.
Fergus MacDonald, who's the, Independent Ireland candidate, is the Transport Police, is that something you're supporting?
Absolutely. And I think, there's no equivocation on crime. And we can put up all the excuses we like, but it's one thing for people to get a sentence. But if that sentence is not served to its maximum allowable, then it's a joke. I mean, we're forever seeing habitual offenders in the papers and the news. 30, 40, 50, 60, 80 crimes. And they're in, as speakers said earlier, they're in a few days, next thing they're back out. So I believe in, there has to be a penalty to pay. And we need judges to step up to the plate and make sure that an appropriate crime or sentence matches the crime.
Eimear Tobin, you're in a rural area, so what's your plan to try and reduce the level of rural crime that we're witnessing countrywide?
Well, I'm not sure now, do people know here that Ireland has the lowest rate of police per head of population in the whole of the EU? So we're starting at a very low base, first of all. Second of all, we keep coming back to the same old argument, more guard the visibility on streets. It does stop opportunistic crime. Number three, there has to be a zero tolerance now because crime has got so, so serious. Everybody is talking late afternoon. They're having reservations about walking around their towns or cities. So there has to be zero tolerance. There has to be minimum sentencing. There has to be even more punitive sentencing for recidivists. It's not been taken seriously. Every year we're talking about all the Gardaí leaving the force. You heard Pather, my brother, talking about more signed up with the Australian force last year than signed up with the Irish force. What are we waiting for? People have to take this really, really serious and change things quickly.
Okay, we're just going to take a very short break. We're going to come back with some of our final issues here with all of our audience and politicians. So do stay with us here in Lunchtime Live's Election Town Hall, where we'll have more. We want to hear your say about the upcoming general election. You're very welcome back to Lunchtime Live's Town Hall election discussion here in Dublin City Centre today with myself, Andrea Gilligan, where we're talking to some of our listeners, the voters, on the Friday 29th, 2024 general election. We just want to hear about the issues that affect you guys, the things that you're talking to the candidates about when they knock on your doors. And just before the break, the issue of a transport police was mentioned, and a lot of people, I think, very exercised about this. But Sean Defoe, you have been looking at this in the political manifesto. Anybody against it?
Well, a few parties not calling for it as opposed to necessarily being against it, which is a difference, I suppose, when you're going down the doors and knocking on it. Two parties actively calling for it in Labour and Fianna Fáil, Independent Ireland, as we've heard earlier, in favour of it, and Aintu as well, who are publishing their manifesto tomorrow. So they're the only ones who mention it specifically. But it's interesting because there's been a row in government about this over the last few years. Fianna Fáil have been calling for this for quite a few years and out on the plinth every few months saying we need to transport, please. Fine Gael, on the other hand, don't agree.
OK, well, the Fine Gael candidate, Grace Boland, is with us here today. Why are you against the transport police? You listen to, what two of our listeners, Shane Gleeson and Paul Gallagher, had to say just before the break, Grace.
As Shane said, I don't think we say that we're against the transport police. We just don't mention it. But what we are doing is we are going to deliver 6,000 new Gardaí over the lifetime of the next government. We are very committed to supporting our Gardaí, giving them more equipment. And we have, in recent years, introduced a whole raft of criminal offences, and we want to introduce one, as Sean said, for retail offences, a standalone criminal offence for retail offences.
So it's the transport police isn't, I suppose, something that, Shane Moynihan, I know that's something you guys support, though.
Big time. We've done the research on this. We think the important thing about the transport police is you need a standalone policing unit to focus on public transport. What's happened to the guards over the last while has been that the core strength has been whittled down because new units are being created. We're being very honest with people and saying putting a standalone transport police in place shows the focus that we're placing on this problem. Public transport needs to be a core issue for the next 5 to 10 years. We need a reliable and safe public transport system.
This is Ruth Coppinger here talking, yeah.
Yeah, just to say on the transport police, I raised that when I was in the Dáil several times. I was on the transport committee. Fianna Fáil could have brought that in at any time. I completely agree. People need to feel safe. Women need to feel safe on public transport. Minorities need to feel safe. And I want to correct one very important thing because I wouldn't like misinterpretation. It was mentioned about shoplifting. and then it was mentioned about a serious assault. They're two very different things. Okay. Obviously, okay. I'm not in favour of that going unpunished. You know, okay.
Just one second, Dahi, and I will try and get back to everybody, but I want to bring in Ronnie. Have I got Ronnie with us? Ronnie Byrne. Yeah, Ronnie, how are you? Yeah, sorry, so it's Dahi Doolan from Sinn Féin. You too support the transport. Yeah,
we do.
You support the transport. Yeah, okay. No, that point was made. Now, Ronnie is with me as well. I've got Ronnie Byrne. Ronnie, it was a point that you've made to me previously over the years in the show. You want more services and amenities. You think that might help to tackle and reduce crime?
Absolutely. Like, I'm 42 years been in the voluntary sector. And the biggest problem is you're going to government agencies, you're trying to get them to put things in place, like sports. Sports is a huge thing. To stop the kids, to get them involved in sports, to get a bit of discipline and everything else, rather than hanging around the street, then getting into crime and getting involved in all that sort of stuff. For the last 10 years, we've been trying to get just one pitch in the Dublin 8 area. The sporting facilities that's in the area is ridiculous for the size of the area. There's 50-odd thousand people in it. We've done an analogy of a couple of counties, right? Between three different counties with some similar populations, they have 22 pitches. The southwest inner city doesn't have one.
Okay. Well, right? Labour's Kieran Ahern is with us. I know, appreciate you can't speak to the Dublin 8 area specifically, Kieran, but is that something, like the idea of more amenities, social services for communities, even if they are in disadvantaged areas, is that a priority for Labour and government?
Absolutely it is. We have a whole section in our manifesto on youth work and the importance of that and the diversion and giving people other alternatives to things to do with their time and diverting them from crime. When it's idleness a lot of the time that has caused the Dublin riots, and people just jumped on the bandwagon there. Young people with they see it as nothing else to do and no alternative. So we want to hugely invest in youth work. It's really, really important. There are huge socio-economic issues behind the crime. Giving harder sentences, tougher sentences, all that kind of stuff is not going to solve the problem, I suppose. As the old saying goes, we have to be tough on crime, tough on the causes of crime. And to be clear, Garda numbers have gone backwards under this government as well, and we want to change that.
Just Paul Gallagher, we're not going to focus specifically, Hazel, if you don't mind, on that today, because we've plenty of discussion about it. But Paul Gallagher, just to respond to Kieran Ahern there, you wanted to make a quick point.
No, okay, and I agree with what Kieran is saying in principle, but there's a big low-hanging fruit here that successive governments have failed. Living overhead accommodation is very, very difficult in Ireland due to draconian planning measures and fire officer, right?
Yeah.
If they can do it in Amsterdam, they can do it in London, they can do it in Paris, why can't they do it in Dublin, right? The Dutch people aren't falling down, getting burned alive every day of the week. There's 60,000 units available within about a mile of O'Connell Street that could be or should be used for overhead accommodation. Sorry, the last bit is, if you have overhead accommodation, you have more people living in the city, you have less crime because you have more visibility, you have more communities, and you're regenerating an area and causing, and then your community guard, he can come in there as well.
It's a fair point around regeneration, no doubt about it. Damien is with us. Damien, you've been a bus driver formerly, isn't that right? You're a Dublin bus driver for about 20 odd years or so. And I know, just to pick up on Kabir's point around transport police and trying to tackle crime, but like, do you feel safe coming in and out of Dublin City?
I think there's an edginess about going in and out of Dublin if you can actually move around it, because I'm on about 10 buses a day as a retiree and I can't get around it because of red lights. This also ties in with truck transport. People tied at lights, motorways. There's an awful lot to be done to improve things. I'd like to see the whole congestion situation reduced, and living above shops most certainly, absolutely, and let the Gardaí do Gardaí's work. More Gardaí, more on the streets, and more enforcement.
Okay.
The spirit of entitlement has taken over from the spirit of responsibility, and we've got to have that.
Okay. That's Damien with us as well, as a former bus driver. I suppose just in the final 2 minutes, Sean, we've heard quite a bit from our politicians here today and really appreciate them joining us and our audience as well. But when you've been trawling through all of these long and lengthy pages of election promises and manifestos, you know, the things that are being promised by politicians, and I appreciate some of them are new candidates, but by their parties, what are we likely to see take shape in any major way in a potential new government? Hard to foresee the future, but I suppose...
Let me get the crystal ball out that I left over in the Newstar studio. Look, it's hard because we know the next government is going to be a coalition of some sort. So it is going to be an amalgam of parties. So all of these documents that you get now are their promises and what they want to do in an ideal world if they had all of the seats to themselves, which they're not going to have. And so there will be things where there are points of difference, and when you come together and put together a programme for government, some of them get dropped out of the way. But I think we've covered out a lot of topics, and it's really interesting to hear the personal lived experiences of people behind them, because when you're just looking at them on a page, you might think, oh, that's a great idea. But then you get into, well, how's it going to be done? How are we going to find more Gardaí, more teachers, more places in an economy that's already at full employment? How are we going to make the big wishes and promises a reality? And something we didn't get time to get into, for example, tax cuts and the economy and all that sort of stuff. And who is going to manage that? How are they going to keep things going over the next few years? So when you have politicians coming to the door, hopefully you will take some of the lived experiences you've heard on the show today and say, well, look, all of it sounds great. You're promising everything to everybody. Feels a little bit like 2007 again. Can it actually become reality, though?
Listen, I just want to sincerely thank everybody for making their way here today, because I know a lot of you have travelled from various different parts of the country to be with us. It was a big ask, and I really genuinely appreciate your time. But more so to those of you who have really shared very personal experiences with us, it's greatly appreciated. I too want to thank all of our politicians. We wish you all the very best of luck, of course, in the upcoming election. And I appreciate you taking time out of the hard-earned canvas. Jennifer Whitmore from the Sock Dems, Eimear Tobin from AIMTU, Ruth Coppinger from People Before Profit Solidarity, Shane Moynihan from Fianna Fáil, Ciarán Ahern from Labour, Hazel Chew from the Greens, Grace Boland, Fine Gael, our Independent Ireland's Fergus MacDonald, and Sinn Féin's Dáithí Doolan. Thanks a million to you all for being with us. My thanks as well to the Dublin Royal Convention Centre for hosting Lunchtime Live's Election Town Hall this afternoon, and of course, as always, to the production team who pulled the whole thing together. But we'll talk to you Lunchtime Live midday tomorrow. Thanks a million.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk.